Greetings, everyone. Welcome to House Mountain Views and to the Boone series. Boone is an East Tennessee teenager on his own at 16 and facing long odds. His daddy taught him rage and not to trust anybody. His mother taught him to keep his head down and hope nobody notices him. Now they're both gone, and what he knows about making it as an adult is next to nothing. He's basically a decent kid, but he's carrying around so much anger and insecurity that sometimes it's hard for him to do the right thing, even when he can figure out what that is. Pushing Back, Matching Scars, and Keeping Secrets, the three books in the series so far, are all written from Boone's point of view. My name is Jim Hartzell, and I hope you enjoy getting to know Boone as much as I have. Thanks for joining us. Pushing Back, Book 1 in the Boone series, by Jim Hartzell. Chapter 6. Not really hungry. I go into the kitchen anyway because it's that time of day. The refrigerator is close to empty, but there is some stuff, and I guess most of it's still good. Maybe I should eat the old stuff first, I think, but I really don't have an appetite right now. So I close the refrigerator and go into the living room. There's nothing on TV, but I sit down in front of it anyway and click through the channels. After a while, I settle on a movie I've only seen 3 or 4 times, so it doesn't matter that it's already a half an hour into it. When the movie's over, I'm not tired, but I know I should get some sleep. And then I think, why is that? Nobody here to tell me when to eat or drink or go to bed or get up. So why am I worried about that? The notion that there's nobody here to tell me when to eat or drink reminds me that there's nobody here to tell me what not to drink, either. Daddy always kept some shine out in the barn and thought none of us knew where it was, but I knew. I wonder how much is there. The flashlight throws a dim beam out across the yard. Batteries must be getting low. One more thing to have to think about buying, but I don't worry about that right now. It's enough to get me out to the barn and into the second stall. Toward the back is a pile of hay that's a little taller than the rest of the bedding. I brush it aside and uncover the wooden box, pick it up, and carry it back to the house. No reason to leave it out there anymore. The box is heavy and makes clinking noises when it bangs against my thighs. It's hard to carry and hold the flashlight, but I managed to get into the house without dropping either one. I set the box down, open the kitchen door, pick up the box, and carry it inside. The screen door bangs shut behind me, and I kick the wooden door closed with my heel. When I set the box down on the kitchen table, I realize I'm breathing hard, and I also realize I'm kind of excited. Never tasted shine before, although, like the other guys at school, I always told everybody I had. Well, Boone, I say to myself, that's about to change. There are 4 jars in the box, 3 of them full, the other about 2/3 full. I take a glass from the cabinet to the right of the sink over to the table, unscrew the jar lid, pour the glass about half full, and look at the jar, still about half full. Maybe a little more than half. Put the jar back in the box and close it. Then I pick up the glass and raise it to my nose. Doesn't smell bad at all. Daddy used to say he only bought the good stuff, and once he mentioned a guy's name, Taggart, Talbot, something like that, from over across the ridge. I have no idea about how to go about buying shine or how much it costs and decide to worry about that later. Carrying the glass with me, I go into the living room and sit on the couch. Settling back, I take my first real drink of shine.
I manage to set the glass down on the floor before the coughing gets completely out of control. My eyes are watering, everything is burning from my lips back, and I'm fighting like hell to keep from throwing up all over the floor. It takes forever to get everything back under control, and I sit there a minute, wiping my eyes and thinking, what the hell was that I just drank? Maybe that wasn't shine after all. Maybe it was something that's killing me from the inside out right now. Nobody would find my body for days, weeks maybe. I stand up to go to the phone and immediately sit back down. The room is moving, tilting, and I'm trying to make it stop. Eventually, everything settles down, and I pick up the glass and look at it. Damn, that's strong stuff. I raise the glass to my lips, thinking, what are you doing, you fool? And take a very small sip. This works much better. The room doesn't go directions it shouldn't go. I set the glass back down on the floor and lean back. Okay, I think. Okay. This is for sipping. By the time the glass is almost empty, I'm enjoying the late-night infomercials and wishing I had a credit card so I could buy one of everything. Guess maybe it's a good thing I don't have one. I'm still not hungry, but one of my buddies at school told me that you should always eat something when you're drinking. I don't know what goes with shine, so I go into the kitchen and look around. After staring at the refrigerator for a while, I decide on a hunk of cheese and some sliced tomatoes. Knife almost gets away from me a couple of times, but I get a plate full and go back into the living room. I understand how Daddy can get so, well, out of control on this stuff, but I don't get why he's so mad when he's loaded. Maybe there's, or was, something besides the shine going on. I try to think about it, but pretty soon I forget what it was I was thinking about, and I'm looking for something else on TV. I don't remember what was on when I fell asleep. 6 hours later, I'm awake and hurting. I've never done anything like that before, plus I slept sort of halfway sitting up on the couch. Plus I buried my daddy after he blew his head off, plus Mama and Hannah are gone, probably for good. I lie there for an hour or so just trying to figure out what to do first. What I decide on is breakfast, or lunch, or whatever meal this is. The rest of the dry cereal later, I'm feeling a little more like normal and feeling like I need to go to the store. There's not much in the kitchen and I need to at least do something. I get Daddy's wallet out of the pile of stuff on the kitchen counter and take everything out. He's got a driver's license and $24 and a couple of slips of paper with names and numbers on them. I set those aside to look at later. The only other thing is a lottery ticket. I look at it and see that it's for this week's game. I have no idea how the lottery is played or what the numbers mean or anything about it, but I put it aside too. I'll have to decide who to ask about this stuff. And that's about it. Not much useful here except for the money and maybe the lottery ticket. I decide to ride the bike down to the store and pick up a few things with Daddy's last bit of money. The store is a mile and a half away, an easy ride for somebody who is used to riding and is not hungover. So I have a little trouble getting there. I push a cart through the aisles and get cereal and bread and bologna and cheese and a couple of 2-liter-sized Thunderstorm sodas. Soda with a kick. Mama never let us buy that. Too much caffeine, she'd always say. It comes to a little less than $14, so I have some left before I have to get into Mama's money. Poster in the window says that the lottery drawing is Friday, and the top prize is $48 million. I don't even let myself think about that. Just get on the bike and pedal back to the house, the bag hanging off the handlebars. With food in the house, I move to the next thing I need to deal with. The electric bill is somewhere in this house, I just don't know where. And I need to find out whether it's been paid or not, and how much it is. Mama never had a checking account, and Daddy never had any money, so the $200 I have is it, until I can come up with something else. When I finally find where Mama kept all the money stuff in a drawer in the kitchen with recipes and stuff like that, I breathe a little easier. The next bill isn't due for another 3 weeks. Must have not come in yet. Over the next 2 days, I changed my mind about a dozen times about Daddy's grave. I decided to leave it the way it is and let the kudzu take that whole little field. And then I think I should plant a tree or something. And then I think, why should I do anything for that nasty old drunk? And then I'm all weepy because I'm all alone, and then I'm back to leaving it the way it is. I don't know what I'll end up doing, but it nags at me something fierce. Nothing from Mama or Hannah or Aunt Claire. Pretty soon it'll be a week. Friday comes and I turn on the TV to the channel that has the lottery results. I do not win the $48 million. What I think I win is $400. I don't know how to play or how to read this, but four of the numbers match, and I think that's what the chart they show says gets $400. It goes by too fast for me to be sure. But if that's true, then I'm in a lot better shape than I thought I was. I need to ask somebody to check this out for me. I can't ask Kurt. He'd make me give him half just for answering the question, and then he probably wouldn't know what he was talking about. Nobody around here would just tell me. They'd want to know how I got the ticket, and if I took it to the store, they might think I stole it from somebody. So I think I've got all this money, and I don't know how to get it. Then I think of Mr. Everett. Would he help me with this? I don't know. Always been a little scared of that house, even before the other kids warned me about it. And when I went up there to use the air pump, I felt like he was watching me out the window the whole time I was in the shed out back. He still scares me a little. But he's the only person I can think of to help with this. Saturday morning, I ride up to the Everett place and lean my back against one of those monster trees and go up on the porch. Screen door is unlocked like before, and I pull it open and knock on the glass pane in the wooden front door. Mr. Everett? No answer, just like before. Mr. Everett, it's Boone again from down the hill. The door opens a crack. Pump's right where you left it. Get your bike off my trees. The door closes. I knock again. Mr. Everett, it's not about the pump. The door opens again. I said, get your bike off my trees. I turn and look at the bike and then turn back. Yes, sir, I'll do that right now. I go down and take the bike over to the tire tracks heading back alongside his house and lay the bike down. The kickstand never did work on that bike. Broken spring or something, so I don't bother with it. I return to the front door. Is that okay? What do you want? I tell him about the lottery ticket and how I think I may have won some money.
Get your daddy to take care of it.
He starts to close the door. He's gone. Mama, too. They run off after a big fight. That was sort of true.
You by yourself down there?
Yes, sir.
How long?
Just a week. He opens the door a little more.
You got the ticket?
Yes, sir.
Give it to me.
Now I don't know what to do. If I hand him the ticket, I may never see it again. And there goes that money. He clears his throat. Sounds like gravel in an old tin can.
What's the matter? Don't trust me? And what'd you come up here asking questions for?
The door closes again, hard this time. I knock on the door again. It opens just a crack like before.
What?
Listen, Mr. Everett, I'm sorry. I don't know what to do with this thing. Here. And I push the ticket through the crack in the door. He jerks it out of my hand and slams the door. Well, that's that, I think. 400 bucks gone. I turn to go and the door opens again.
Come back tomorrow.
I shrug and head on down to my bike and ride home slow. The phone is ringing. Hi.
Hey, man, it's Kurt. You sound like shit. Are you sick?
Hell yes, I'm sick, I think to myself. Might as well set fire to that damn ticket.
Yeah, I feel like shit. What do you want? Don't be an asshole, man. I just wanted to tell you about a test coming up day after tomorrow. It's math. You might actually be passing math. Thought you might want to. Never mind. See you sometime.
No, man, listen, sorry. I feel like I'm about to throw up all the time. Thanks for the heads up. If anybody asks them, tell me I'll be back when this is over.
Sure, no problem.
He sounds pissed and hangs up. I don't blame him. Probably the only guy in school that doesn't treat me like trash, and I'm blowing him off. I start to call him back and think, why bother? I pour another shine, not too much this time, and stretch out on the couch. The next day, I go back to Mr. Everett's place. I don't know why. It's about 1 in the afternoon when I knock on his door. It opens right away, just a crack, and an envelope comes through. I grab it. It feels heavy. And when I look inside, it's full of 20s.
Had to give that kid $20 to cash it in for me, the thin voice says from behind the door. The rest of it's in there.
He starts to close the door.
Wait, I say.
I can't believe I've almost got $400 in my hand. Don't you want some for, you know, for your trouble? Just let me give you a...
Don't insult me, kid.
His voice is a little angry.
Just say thank you and get out of here.
Yeah, I mean, thank you, Mr. Everett, thank you. The door's already closed. I go back home and add the money to what Mama had in her envelope, then take it out and spread it over the kitchen table and look at it. Then I stack it up and count it, and then count it again. $491. I put $200 of it in my pocket and look around for a place to hide the rest. $200 back up in the envelope in case Mama shows back up and needs it, I decide, and put the rest of the money in my top drawer with my socks and underwear. I need to get back to my place up by the pool. I haven't been there since, well, in a week now. It's calling me, cool and quiet, just what I need right now, and maybe forever, but right now for sure. I start to look for Mama to tell her where I'm going and then remember. No one to tell. The little field where Daddy's buried is on the way, and I decide I can't stay away from that part of the farm forever. When I round the trees, it still rattles me to see it, but it looks like the ground has settled some. If it'll go down a little more, it'll be the same as the rest of the field, and maybe I won't need the kudzu. For now, I leave it alone. Walk wide around it, close enough to see that the kudzu is growing. Like there was any doubt, that stuff will grow anywhere. Stepping into the woods is like leaving the world behind. I think briefly I should have brought some shine with me, but that doesn't last long. This place doesn't need anything. Path to the creek, and my pool is clear to me, and I follow it, hurrying a little as I get closer. The noise comes to me faint on the wind, but clear, like a bell that doesn't fade out but keeps sounding. Then the wind shifts, and I lose it. It stays quiet the rest of the way to my spot. Nothing else disturbs me, nothing intrudes. The sound of the water and the cool of the stones draw the tension and worry right out of me. I have time to think of nothing in particular. I stay until the light starts to fade, and I remember I didn't bring a flashlight. Even though I'm familiar with the trail, I'd rather travel it with some kind of light. There are no lights on in the house. I had not left any on because I didn't know how long I'd stay out there. The day is fading fast. Just enough light for me to get into the house and turn on some lights. A fried bologna and cheese sandwich and a glass of thunderstorm soda, and I realize I didn't buy anything that could pass as dessert. I make a mental note to get some ice cream. Now that I've got some extra cash. The weekend passes, and the next week also. I decide to go to school a couple of days, keep my name off the shit list with the truant officer. Next year he won't even bother, but this year he might, and I don't want any visitors. Kurt must still be pissed at me. He gives me half a wave when he sees me on Tuesday and then sits with some other guys at lunch, leaving me at a table by myself. Fine by me, I say to myself, and then I hear, mind if I sit down? When I look up, it takes me a minute. We used to call Nancy ironing board, as in flat as an ironing board. so it's really not surprising that I don't recognize her right off. She is definitely not flat anymore. She still has those glasses that keep slipping down her nose. When she smiles, it's easy to recognize her. She had braces put on toward the end of last year, and they're still there. You can barely see her teeth. Not somebody the guys have ever been interested in, which I guess makes her my equal. Girls have never been all that interested in me. Too short, too skinny, funny-shaped head. I know I'm the least good-looking guy around. Nah, I don't mind, I say, and she sits down opposite me. There's long silence, both of us looking at our school lunches, and I finally say, "Want to guess what that shit is on your tray?" She smiles a little, not enough to open her mouth, which I understand with the braces and all. "I don't think it's actual shit," she says. And I grin in spite of myself. "Guess you're right," I say. Then there's another long silence, and finally she says, "I'm going to take a chance and see what it tastes like." "You first," I say, and she picks up a fork. "Together," she says. So I pick up my fork, and she says, "On three." When she gets to three, we both get a fork full. It's pretty tasteless, and I say so. She nods. Another silence, and for some reason, they're getting less awkward. I take a few more bites and push the rest of the food around on the plate, then drop my fork in the middle of the glop and stand up. "Had all I can stand, Nancy. See you later." She looks up at me. "You've been out a few days. Feeling better?" "Yeah, some kind of stomach thing. Shine'll do that to you, I think, but don't say out loud." "Okay, feel better," she says, and looks back down at her food, still in separate piles on her tray. "Thanks," I say, and head off to dump the tray. As I'm leaving the cafeteria, I take one look around the room. Nancy is watching me, staring, really. Curtis still with his group. He catches my eye and points to Nancy and then makes a loose fist with his left hand, pushes his right middle finger in and out, in and out. He and his buddies laugh, and one of them makes humping motions against the table. Nancy follows my look over and sees the show. She goes beet red and gets up, leaving her tray, and runs out of the cafeteria. Kurt and his crew are falling all over themselves laughing, like the rest of the students looking at them, and the cafeteria monitor is on his way over. The look on his face tells me this is not the first time he's had to deal with this group of assholes. Last year, I would have been right in there with him, but with everything that's happened to me lately, I just feel like I can't be bothered with that stuff right now. I feel a twinge of sympathy for Nancy. All she did was sit down with me at the lunch table. I can imagine the hell she'll be going through for the next week or so. I make up my mind right then to stay the hell away from her. I don't want to defend her, and I sure don't want to go up against those guys. But I know I don't want to draw any attention to myself. I just want to show up often enough to keep everybody off my back. I got enough stuff to worry about without the school trying to get in touch with Mama or Daddy for a conference. I hope you enjoyed this installment of the Boone series. The background music you hear is "The Wind That Shakes the Barley," played on a Masterworks hammer dulcimer. If you can't wait to find out what happens next, or you want a copy for yourself, the Boone series and all my other books are available on my website, housemountainviews.com. I also encourage you to support any independent bookstores in your area. Stop by and ask for the title you're interested in. If they don't have it, they can probably order it for you. Thanks for spending your time here at House Mountain Views. Y'all take care of yourselves and stay in touch.